Good evening and welcome to the May 9th meeting of the Joint Committee on Marijuana Regulation. Tonight we have two public hearings. One is going to be on House Bill 2198 and the second on Senate Bill 1015. We're going to start with House Bill 2198, which is a bill that we talked quite a bit about in the last meeting as something that we were going to continue working on. And so this is us carrying through with that, and we've had some important work happen over the last 7 days. So I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2198 and invite Mark Mayer, our legislative council drafter, forward. And for each of these bills tonight, we're going to have Mr. Mayer start by walking us through what the relevant amendment does. And then second, I'm going to invite forward Rob Bovet, Jeff Rhodes, and Anthony Taylor to talk about a work group that happened over the last week that a number of you attended a meeting of, but we're going to have them start, and then we've got plenty of people signed up to give their firsthand impressions, and other folks too. Welcome, Mr. Mayor.
Chairs Leininger, Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel. I've been asked to testify as to the content of the Dash 9 amendments to House Bill 2198. I would like to start by saying that all the material in this amendment has been presented before this committee prior to this time, albeit maybe in a slightly different form. So it is not as if this is brand new material. It is mainly material that was presented to this committee through the Dash 7 amendments to House Bill 2198 and a variety of amendments to Senate Bill 1057 last week that were not actually part of the work session, but that I will connect to now because those were discussed at that time. So I will hopefully connect the pieces of this amendment to that particular date. Dash 9 amendments to House Bill 2198. The first portion of this is dedicated to the creation of a commission, the Oregon Cannabis Commission. Right off the bat, it does set forth the composition of the commission. The composition is a little bit different than in previous forms. I will go through that really quickly just so that everybody knows who is sitting on this commission. The public health officer of the state or that officer's designee. And then 8 members appointed by the governor, a patient card holder under the Oregon medical marijuana system, a person designated to produce marijuana for a patient, an attending physician, a person representing both OHA and OLCC, a local health officer, a law enforcement officer, and then a person with knowledge about research protocol. So it's a 9-person commission. And then these 9 members are tasked with doing the following. Number 1, to make recommendations to the next legislative assembly, and in particular the interim committees on judiciary and health, on what a possible framework for the future governance of the Oregon medical marijuana program should be. And it directs them to do 3 specific things: to both consider proper oversight and regulation of each of the entities that currently are regulated by the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program, what necessary amendments to the laws of the state should be in order to achieve this possible framework, and then finally, what is its continued role? So it's going to be looking at those 3 things, making a recommendation to the next legislative assembly as to what the future governance of the medical marijuana program should be. It's also going to look at research and possible ways to take steps forward with respect to researching the medical use of cannabis as well as other issues. Also public health policy and public safety policy, agricultural practices, and things of that sort. So those are that's what the commission is mainly tasked with. There's some other language in here I'd be happy to answer questions about, but I'm going to move on to other parts of the amendment just to try to be expedient. Page 5 of the amendment, Section 8, this is the amendment that you guys have seen in 2 different forms before, what has been commonly called the 20-pound amendment. In other words, marijuana grow sites underneath the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act being allowed to transfer up to 20 pounds into the Oregon Liquor Control Commission system per year. And so a transference from medical to recreational. It is a combination of two different amendments that you've seen before. I'll go over the three salient points. Number one, the 20 pounds can be transferred at any point during the year. The idea being that since this transfer is being tracked, it doesn't matter exactly when it happens. What matters is it's being tracked, it's being counted for. Secondly, there was a version that said more than 12 mature marijuana plants, but no more than 24, putting a cap on the limit. The cap on the ceiling has been eliminated, so any grow site with 12 mature marijuana plants or more may transfer into the Oregon Liquor Control Commission system. And then finally, one of the versions had a cutoff date by which a marijuana grow site could take advantage of this, and that was on the effective date of the act. That remains in this bill.
Could you back away from the mic just a little bit?
Nope, sorry.
Thank you.
It's live tonight.
It's super alive.
Yeah.
All right, Chair Burdick, thank you. Hopefully that's better. The next section is designated primary caregiver. That's Section 10 of the amendment. That merely clarifies that a caregiver can perform any duty for a patient card holder underneath the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act related to processing or producing. It doesn't change what a patient card holder can do with respect to production or processing. It merely clarifies that the caregiver can do those things for the patient. It is live. Plant limits. Everything from this point on in the amendment is something that, real briefly, I need to explain, will not take effect unless certain things happen. So if neither Senate Bill 1047 or this bill passes, of course, existing law remains and the status quo remains. If Senate Bill 1047 passes...
And to interrupt, 1057, I believe.
Excuse me. If Senate Bill 1057 passes... then those provisions in that particular bill will control. If both bills pass, these provisions will control with respect to those areas of 1057 that they touch on. If only this bill passes, then the status quo... If only this bill passes, then existing law is what happens. There will be no change to the law. So in order for these provisions from this point forward to take effect, both bills have to pass. That's the way it's written. Okay? All right. That's the easy way of explaining it. I don't have to get into the language on that. Plant limits. Section 12 basically, and Section 13 basically undoes the plant limits with respect to immature plants that were set in 1057.
Why don't you take that one mic and just move it all the way over?
Yeah. So 1057 set a cap for immature marijuana plants at 2 for every mature marijuana plant that is owned by a patient or marijuana grow site. What Sections 12 and 13 do is they undo that particular provision of 1057 and they set a new limit. The new limit is for each mature marijuana plant that is allowed under OMMP, there will be allowed 3 immature plants that are 24 inches high and higher, which brings it into alignment with pre-2015 standards or the standards that were in effect before the year 2015. And for those immature marijuana plants that are less than 24 inches high, there will be allowed 6 immature marijuana plants. The reason that this was done, and this could be better explained by the people who are going to come up to testify after me, is that 24 inches is the point at which plants become viable, largely. And again, there will be people who can explain that a little bit better than I can. Moving along, page 11. Which is where tracking begins in this amendment. There are several sections here that touch on 1057, Senate Bill 1057. Section 16 merely clarifies that additional security system requirements will not be imposed upon marijuana grow sites pursuant to the provision of law that requires tracking. Section 17 states that if there is evidence related to a violation of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act that is discovered by a regulatory specialist while they are visiting somebody's home for purposes of inspecting their marijuana grow site, if that evidence was not, if they got that evidence not as a direct result of using metric, then it cannot be used against the person in a civil or criminal proceeding. In other words, metric is what they are there to inspect and investigate, and when they're conducting their inspections and investigations, only evidence that they gather from the use of metric will be allowed in civil proceedings.
So, Madam Chair, essentially what you're talking about is fruits of the crime.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
And statutorily setting that limit as opposed to case law, which is usually used for that. The important thing to remember for those of you on judiciary is it only extends to alleged violations of the Medical Marijuana Act. So if one of the regulatory specialists walks in for purposes of an administrative hearing and they find a violation of some other crime, that would still be admissible. Section 18 pushes back the implementation date for tracking from July 1st, 2018 to January 1st, 2019. That's on pages 12 and 13. And then there are several technical provisions after that that are probably not necessary to go into at this time. So hopefully that was a clarifying discussion of House Bill 2198-9 and how it interacts with Senate Bill 1057. I could take questions on that now or quickly go through the other amendments.
Do people have questions that they know they have on this draft? All right.
I actually have one.
Okay.
Just a detailed question.
Okay. First, Co-Chair Burdick and then Rep. Wilson.
Thank you. On the immature plants, does that mean that a person can have three that are over 24 and six that are under 24?
Chair Burdick, that is correct. Nine total per mature plant.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So, Rep. Wilson, what would you like to say?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mark, could you enunciate again the relationship between these two bills and what prevails and what doesn't according to combinations?
Okay. So from the point forward at which I first discuss how the bills start interacting with one another, where there's a title that says plant limits, if only Senate Bill 1057 passes, those provisions will of course prevail. If only House Bill 2198 passes, then none of the provisions in House Bill 2198 that interact with Senate Bill 1057 will be enacted into law. They are contingent on passage of Senate Bill 1057. And so existing law with respect to those provisions would continue.
Okay.
If both bills pass, then 2198 would prevail.
Do you have a question, Senator Prezanski?
I think it's more of a statement. I know that Mark's going to go through these other amendments that are here, but I think to expedite it, the dash 14s are exactly the same as the dash 9s, with the exception that what I would call the marriage penalty would not be imposed. In other words, if you have a mom and pop married, both have cards, they would each still be able, as they can under current law, have six mature plants plus the four that go to the household. And so that household would have the ability to have 16 plants, where the dash nines roll back and basically penalize the two that are growing at the same location. And again, I'll use husband-wife since that seems to be one of the pairings that we see. And they would be limited to a total of 10, meaning 6 for medical, 4 for the household. And that's my understanding. It's the only differences between the 9s and the 14s.
Chair, Senator Prezansky, that is correct. There is a one-word difference between the 9s and the 14s. It is on page 8, line 8. And it just changes the word 6 to the number 12, which increases what's allowed at an annex.
Great. And then in keeping with the comment that Senator Prezansky made, let's go forward to the amendments. And we have a number of people signed up to testify on this bill, and then we also have Senate Bill 1015 with a number of people signed up to testify. And we have Rep. Wilson and Ms. Moran who are here to talk about that one, too, after you do your introduction of that bill in the next segment. So please keep going. And committee members, feel free to signal if you have any questions as we move forward. But then we'll start inviting up some of the testimony.
All right. I'll try to go through these chairs as quickly as possible. The Dash 11 amendments to 2198 were first seen in the Dash 14 amendments to Senate Bill 1057. These amendments basically reconstruct the 1,000-foot rule with respect to schools. As you know, there is a law on the books about how a county or a city can approve a marijuana retailer to be located closer than 1,000 feet to a school, except it's not working out quite as well at the county level as was anticipated. And so this basically moves it to the state level and allows the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to make that determination instead of cities and counties. It's basically what it does. It allows a state agency to make the determination instead of a city or county local governing body. The Dash 12s to House Bill 21.
I think to just clarify on that Dash 11s, there will still be a requirement that the state will contact either the city or the county to ensure there's no other prohibition, such as an ordinance that they have drafted, that would keep that from occurring. And we're just shifting the distance to be determined at OLCC like they do the 1,000-foot rule, and there we'll do the same thing. But I want to make certain the record's clear that if the city or the county already has an ordinance that would prohibit siting within that buffer zone of 500,000 feet, they will still be able to exercise that ordinance, and it would not be those sites or applications wouldn't be cited there.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Prezansky is correct. A local government would still be able to set the limit higher than the 500-foot allowed here. And, in fact, some of the language here is seen as an improvement by certain invested parties in that it's stronger and that there needs to be a finding of a physical or geographical barrier capable of preventing children from traversing to the premises of the retailer, which is stronger language than in previous versions of this concept.
Okay.
The Dash 12s, these are a variation of the Dash 41. They're actually not a variation. They're almost an exact copy of the Dash 41s, which were discussed last week to Senate Bill 1057. And this concerns how the tracking is financed with respect to marijuana grow sites. As briefly as possible, what this does is it does three things. It caps OHA registrants at twice the amount they would otherwise pay to be registered under the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. It allows any excess costs associated with tracking to be collected as a fee imposed on other OLCC licensees. And then for the upcoming biennium, as opposed to increasing any fees, it directs OHA to take money that it's collected from registrants in previous years and to transfer that money to OLCC for purposes of implementing tracking. So it does those three things. The Dash 13 amendments to House Bill 2198 are another version of the 20-pound amendment. This one is exactly the same as the one in the Dash 9 amendments, minus the date by which a marijuana grow site must be registered. Now, real quickly, if you adopt both the dash 9s and the dash 13s, they'll both work together because they're exactly the same, except the one that will prevail will be the dash 13s because it is less restrictive, just so you know. Then finally, Senator Prezansky already talked about the dash 14s, which is a one-word difference from the dash 9s. And all these amendments have been prepared so that you can adopt all of them together, except for the 9s and the 14s. They're the ones where there's a policy choice that I couldn't write around the fact that there was no way to for you guys to be able to adopt them in different amendments. So the dash 15s, though, they're a simple request. They're a request put into a member through the OLCC to basically give them a little bit more flexibility with how they impose sanctions against licensees that are either applicants for licensing or licensees who are misbehaving, basically. What these amendments do is they basically allow them some wiggle room to do something between taking a pass on disciplining and suspending or revoking their license. These amendments would allow them to license or issue a restricted license or to restrict the use of a license, which would allow them a little bit more flexibility with respect to, okay, this person is violating the laws, but not in a way that justifies suspension, in a way that maybe allows them to, you know, restrict the license in some way. Okay. OLCC could probably speak a little bit more to that. That's the amendment package. Are there any questions?
Thank you. I think we've got one from Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just missing my dash 14, so could you remind me what that does again? You said it is in conflict with the 9s.
Right. All of these amendments could be adopted, and I could stack them all in a combination amendment, except the 9s and the 14s. So you have to either adopt the 9s and the 14s, and they are only different with respect to one thing, which is the 9s allow 6 marijuana plants at a patient residence, and the 14s allow 12 plants at a patient residence. This, of course, would be in conjunction with the 4 that they are allowed per household underneath Measure 91.
Okay, and that actually raises another question about what we've already done. We've got the 10-plant limit, but it's unclear to me if you have 2 cardholders, and they would they be able to have 12 plants as opposed to 10 under the way we have it written now in 10.
They'd be able to have 16 instead of 10.
No, I'm talking about what we did, because I think it's in 1057 as
it
well.
It is in 1057.
So that 10-plant limit, if you have 2 cardholders, could they give up their 4 under Measure 91 and have 12 total under that amendment? That was unclear to me.
Chair Burdick, no. They have the 4 underneath Measure 91 as a right under Measure 91, mm-hmm. and every household has that right. What the amendments to this particular statute in Senate Bill 1057 do is they specify that at one of these addresses, a patient cardholder may only have 6, which would then allow them 10 total.
Right.
But you couldn't stack at an address without a designated grow site or designating a person to grow for you.
So I see that Senator Prezansky has a question. Do you have a follow-up?
I want to
first?
Follow up with this.
Okay.
So I think to just kind of flush this out, the difference is that if you have a husband and wife and they each have a medical card, they would have in their own right be able to grow 6 plants. Mm-hmm. The household is limited to 4 plants, so 6 plus 6 plus 4 gets you the 16. The way that the dash 9s are written, we're going to penalize that couple and say you can only have 1 6 plants plus 4. What I would throw out, if you had 2 individuals that were living at the same residence, not married, if they broke up and moved to different residences, they each would have 6 plus 4, would be a total of 20 between the two of them if they were not at the same household. So it's kind of like the tax issue about how marriage has certain benefits or benefits.
So I have a question, actually.
I might question that, but that's
it made a point.
Okay.
So if the 14 were to pass, which would allow a household that has 2 members, each of whom has cards, to have up to 16 plants, would it also then enable that household to sell 20 pounds a year into the OLCC regulated system as an unregistered I mean, would that household be able to actually utilize the opening that has just been created to enable households or to enable growers of more than 12 plants to sell into the OLCC system?
Chair Leininger, or no. You would have to have more than 12 mature marijuana plants produced at a marijuana grow site. Not 12, but more than 12. So you would have to have 13.
Right, but if under the math that I thought you just walked through in the dash 14, you have 16, is that not 13 or more? And would that not fit?
That was not the intent of the way the 20-pound amendment was written, but some clarifying language might be necessary if you wanted to ensure that that would not be the interpretation.
We could put that on the record, Madam Co-Chair. I mean, the way this is set up is it has to be a medical grow site with 13 or more to qualify. The 91 rule that came out of the Department of Justice is something separate and distinct, and you cannot piggyback what 91 gives you to what the medical grow 13 plus would do.
Okay. So if that were to proceed, though, it sounds like you wouldn't have objection to clarifying.
Absolutely
or putting
not.
In.
Absolutely not.
Okay, any other?
If I could just follow up again on the plant limit. You said that Measure 91 creates a right for plants, but that's a statutory measure. So would we have the flexibility, if we so choose, if two people have medical cards, to decide whether they want 12 medical plants or a medical grow and a recreational grow? Do we have the flexibility to do that if we choose?
Chair Burdick, absolutely. You can specify who can own how much marijuana. They're all statutory, so you could override any statute and create your own standard with respect to any situation.
Thank you.
All right. So at this point, I'm not seeing any more hands for questions to Mr. Mayor. So thank you for being here. I'm going to ask you to come back up in about 30 minutes when we ask you to walk through Senate Bill 1015. But now I'd like to invite forward Rob Bovet, Jeff Rhodes, and Anthony Taylor, who are three of a number of people who participated in some conversations about essentially how to give voice to amendments and themes that were raised in the 1057 meeting last Tuesday in ways that might not draw opposition from groups that often communicate with each of these folks, which was somewhat of a cross-sampling of the stakeholder community. Now, I'm not asking you to say unequivocally that you support a draft that's only recently become available or that you think that the people who tend to agree with you would support it, but if you could describe the process that was used so people who are tuned in have a sense of the conversations that went into us fulfilling the commitment we made to the public about trying to further work and study the ideas that were not in 1057, but that everyone wanted to further study and analyze, that'd be great, and offer any comments that you'd like to make.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Rob Ovett, Legal Counsel, Association of Oregon Counties. As you recall from our last meeting, I and various other folks agreed to do a work group and see if we could work through all of the various amendments that were offered to 1057 and see if we could reach some consensus, at least among the three of us, which I think generally speak to a wide array of interests. That was done through a series of two meetings. The first was a larger meeting with probably at least a dozen people, including some of you as well. And then we followed it up with another hour and a half meeting the next day. And the result is the dash nines. So the dash nines accurately reflect, in my opinion, what we kind of settled on. I've only had a chance to read through them once. I did notice at least one, maybe two technical things that we need to fix in them to make them actually do what we thought we were doing. But they are generally an accurate reflection of the kind of agreement we had in the work group. I think I can at least speak for my own client, and I think I can sell that to them without much grief. So happy to answer any questions you might have about those details. turn it over to Anthony and Jeff.
Thank you. And while you're switching the mic, I wanted to note that Nikki Terzieff and Christine Everts also sat in on that meeting and offered good insights. And I think Ms. Everts was also in a subsequent meeting. So there were a number of helpful perspectives offered, and probably I'm missing some people. I think maybe Mr. Houlihan was at one of the meetings. No. All right. In any event, we welcome robust testimony and support and expressing concern or opposition to anything in this bill and also in 1015 later. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chairs and members of the panel. My name is Anthony Taylor, President of Compassionate Oregon. I would just like to echo Mr. Bovet's comments. This work group did spend a good amount of time with good conversation, and I would also like to echo Co-Chair Leininger's comments about the involvement with Christine Phillips on this, too. She was very instrumental in some of this stuff, sorting through some of this stuff. So we had a good meeting. The Dash 9s do reflect what we came out of that meeting with, and we think it's a good foundation for proceeding along these paths. I would also add that my members also support the Dash 14s, the marriage issue. Other than that, yeah, we're in support of the Dash 13s. We think they're a solid foundation that will provide a future for the medical marijuana program and provide an avenue for the medical marijuana growers to have access.
You know what? I have a clarifying question from Representative Wilson.
You meant Dash 9, didn't you?
I'm sorry. Yes, I did. Okay. Dash 9. So we're in support of those, and we think it's lays a foundation for a good future for OMMP. And provides the access for the adult use for some of the OMMP growers.
Excellent. And I think Senator Przanski has a question now, or would you like to?
I do have a question, Anthony. You sent me an email, and you sent others as to concerns. It sounded to me that out of the second meeting, that yourself and Christine were not in total agreement with what was in the Dash 9s, that the Dash 14s did in fact reflect what you thought was there. And I don't have the memo in front of me. I'll go upstairs and get it. But there are at least two different points that you brought up. And now I'm kind of sitting here wondering what has altered your position that you have stated in the email that you sent to me.
Well, we do have a couple of small concerns. One is the...
You just put on the record.
Yes, we do have a couple of small concerns. One is the voting status of the OHA and OLCC members on the commission. We think that is the best way to go because of, both those agencies have a vested interest in how this commission decides and which way it's going to move for, guiding the medical marijuana program. And we think that would be an appropriate way to maintain their input, but yet allow it to move forward more as a medical commission than agencies fighting over the direction it might go. We did have some concerns with the immature plant limits also. We think that the best way to handle it, frankly, is to allow Metric to do that. The way Metric handles the OLCC growers right now is a immature plants in trays are tagged, given an identification number. And then once a plant is put in the ground and reaches the height of 24 inches, it's tagged and it becomes tracked. And we think that's the solution rather than limiting it. The OLCC growers are not limited. They're tracked. And we think the same courtesy should be extended to the OMMP growers. I do think that, bear with me just one moment. The issue I expressed in my memo regarding tracking, I think most of that's been resolved in the Dash 9s here. And I do have a concern on the tracking that the administrative fees aren't added, and the dash 12s speak to this, and we would support the dash 12s. We just really think it's important that you know, there's not a lot of money added to these patients. We don't think that as many patients are going to slide over into OLCC. I'm sorry, growers to OLCC from OMP as the agencies anticipate.
Okay, we've got a number of people signed up to testify, so it sounds like hopefully that covered the points that you want to relay. Mr. Rhodes.
Co-chairs Burdick and Leininger, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Rhodes. I'm a governor's senior policy advisor. I'm here today for just some brief remarks about our efforts with House Bill 2198-9, and I want to thank the committee for engaging the governor's office in this important discussion. This was a work group product, an attempt to come to consensus after taking into consideration what was a very broad sweeping and wide range of stakeholders that were involved in the process. And we think that this represents a good faith effort at affecting that outcome. Of course, like any good work group, not everybody got absolutely everything that they wanted out of it, but we had a really good discussion, and we think we've come up with a good product out of that. The governor's office is officially neutral on House Bill 2198-9, but wanted to come and say thank you for engaging us in the process, and thank the members of this committee for the thoughtful work on cannabis policy in Oregon.
Great. Thanks.
Madam Co-Chair, yes. If I may, the one thing that I failed to mention was the cutoff date for the OMMP growers' access into the adult use system. We think that should be open-ended and not restricted to just the people that are in the program by a certain date. I think it would impact the number of patients or of growers that may sign up, become involved with the OMMP program, if that's not a continuing option.
So, thanks. That's helpful feedback. I will say, as I'm thinking through these amendments, that one concern I have is I hope that we can structure a system that doesn't cause OMMP growers who sell into the OLCC-regulated system to operate under a system that is so much less costly than the OLCC licensed growers who are selling to the OLCC licensed system, that we somehow undermine the efforts of people who've gone through OLCC licensure to operate in that system. I think that's an important balance we need to make sure we, an important issue that we make sure that we're attuned to, because it wouldn't be fair to totally upend the OLCC licensed producers who have been operating with the reasonable expectation that they were going to be in a system that didn't have sources that were operating with much less costly regulatory burden. So I don't know exactly how that plays out. I'd have to study this more closely, but I think that that's an issue we got to attend to. And then, you know, yes, please go ahead and make one final comment, but then we do have a lot of other people signed up, and I want to make sure we get a chance for them to come speak.
New local ordinances in some of these counties are requiring non-conforming use permits for medical grows, and for instance, those charges can be as high as $3,200. They spend as much on their infrastructure, their getting ready to grow, and the process and package and all that sort of stuff as most of the industry does. But one thing that the OMMP growers that the OLCC growers don't do is they give away thousands of dollars of their inventory to medical marijuana patients, and we have to keep that in mind. So the burden as well for the patients that they're growing for, they have to pay the grow site registration fee. So sometimes the yearly cost for an OMMP grower can be as high as $3,200 to $4,000 once they get all their fees paid. And then if they are growing for 16 patients, that's 24 pounds at a minimum that's going to come out of their inventory. So at $1,000 a pound, that's $24,000 a year that they take out of inventory every year that is no way to post
OLCC grower doesn't have to account for or provide. So those are important facts in determining how much money an OMMP grower has invested and has to spend.
Thank you.
Respect to how much an OLCC
I appreciate grower. That. Thank you. Okay. Thanks for coming up, you three. And I'm going to invite you to go back to your seats, but we really appreciate that input. And now let's invite forward, please, Chris McAllister, Sally Alworth, and Lynn Aaron, perhaps from, looks like maybe from Linn County. And any of the committee members who have been developers, key architects of the thinking that went into amendments to 1057 or to 2198 that we're talking about, feel free to weigh in. I don't know if you would like to come to the dais or if you feel like you're getting it. I want to make sure I give Senator Przanski in particular an opportunity to cover themes that you want to make sure are covered. Would you like to go to the dais after this panel, or do you feel like you're getting a chance to?
Madam Co-Chair, I'm more than fine staying here. I do have Mr. John Bays here, who I've asked to come up because he has a lot of expertise in the medical side and why some of the stuff that's coming forward.
So maybe next up we'll have Mr. Bays come forward, and you two can make some of the points that you would like to make in tandem. And then we've got a number of people after that.
Yep. Okay, great. Thank you.
Hi, welcome. Please start by stating your name for the record and let us know what you think.
Co-Chairs Burdick and Leininger, members of the committee. My name is Sally Alworth. I'm one of the owners of Luminous Botanicals, and we're a two-person cannabis concentrate company based in City of Portland. We operated on the medical market for 2 years, and then we've spent the last 8.5 months trying to be licensed to join the adult use market. We're now, as my business partner says, 75% legal. We have been licensed as a commercial kitchen by the Oregon Department of Agriculture. We've been licensed by the OLCC. We have an occupancy permit from the City of Portland, and we are waiting on the Office of Neighborhood Involvement to award our marijuana business license in the City of Portland.
Congratulations.
I also serve on the legislative committee for the Oregon Cannabis Association, and I'm here testifying on behalf of our membership tonight. So the Oregon Cannabis Association is comprised of over 170 cultivators, processors, edible makers, retailers, and allied businesses throughout Oregon. As Oregon and other states move beyond prohibition, we seek clear and sensible regulation that promotes health and safety in our communities, excellence in our products and services, and compliance at every level. We share the committee's goal of minimizing diversion from the legal cannabis market, and we recognize that one component of preventing illegal movement of material is increased tracking of medical product. However, we have strong concerns about trying to provide medical growers an incentive to accept additional tracking by allowing them to transfer cannabis into the adult use market as specified in the -7 and -8 amendments, if the consequence of doing so is market destabilization or flooding the recreational supply chain. As the Oregon Cannabis Association has previously testified, any provision that allows medical growers to access the adult use retail market without conforming fully with OLCC rules gives those growers an unfair advantage over the more than 1,000 family farmers who have applied for OLCC licenses over the last 15 months and the already licensed 500 or more adult use producers. Many of those growers have invested literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in the transition from medical to adult use cultivation, securing water rights, navigating complex land use requirements, local government licensing, installing comprehensive security systems, and bringing their facilities into full alignment with local building code. As stated, there are already almost 500 growers licensed by the OLCC and more than 500 additional applications pending. There is no doubt that there will be an oversupply of cannabis flower produced by just these growers. The OHA has a registry of over 33,000 medical grow sites as of April 2017, and if even 10% of those growers begin selling into the recreational market, as estimated by proponents of this bill, Oregon will add another, depending on which of the amendments is adopted, 33,000 to 82,500 pounds of cannabis to the recreational supply. As oversupply rises, flower prices will plummet, and the small family-run farms, the micro-canopies, and Tier 1 producers who are the most vulnerable will see their investments become valueless. Additionally, medical growers will be able to undercut prices of OLCC licensed growers because they have a lower cost of licensure, lower compliance costs, lower startup costs, and lower operating costs. We understand that one of the concerns is that patients are being prevented from receiving medicine. As a participant myself on the Canopy Bump Up Rules Advisory Committee for the OLCC, I strongly believe that this new system will help provide additional medicine to those who may have lost their grower due to attrition into the adult use market. Oregon must give this program and new processes like the Bump Up a chance to work before adding tens of thousands of medical pounds to the market. If the committee is determined to invite medical growers into the adult use market, we believe those growers should meet the following conditions. They should satisfy the same land use compatibility requirements as OLCC licensed growers and should not be allowed to grow for sale into the legal market in areas zoned residential within city limits. They should be already registered with the OHA when this statute is adopted, as written in the Dash 9 amendment. They should be allowed to sell no more than 10 pounds of indoor or 15 pounds of outdoor flower per year to OLCC licensed wholesalers and processors. In the alternative, the amount medical growers can sell into the adult use market, should be based on a percentage of what they cultivate with a cap on the final amount, something in line with the bump up canopy rules. So on behalf of our member businesses, I appreciate the opportunity to offer this feedback, and I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
Actually, I'm not here to talk about what we have been talking about. I wanted to add more. I sent every committee member.
Could you please state your name for the record?
Oh, sorry. Lynn Ahern. I am a farmer and live in Linn County and am partnership in a company, Kenaglow. We make lotions, and my presentation was to try and get everybody to do the same as the production side, where there's tiers. Is it possible that we could tier the other side, the
medical side?
Processing, yes. I get those mixed up because, anyway, that's what we do, is we process for the medical market, but we decided to go into the OLCC side. And reading the rules, it doesn't seem like there's a tier system for the producers or the processors. And I sent this message to everybody. Should I read it?
Sure.
Or do you want to even bring it up now?
You know, I think this is you've come here to testify, and I want to honor that. And
yeah.
So maybe you could briefly read it, or
okay,
if you could summarize it, and we can submit it to the record. We have it on OLIS. Okay, we do have it in
yes.
the permanent record. So if you could summarize it in the next couple minutes, that would be perfect.
Okay.
And then we'll move forward to Mr. McAllister.
We're looking for a tier situation in processing, and our recommendation was $1,000 for annual sales incomes of $100,000 or less. These are for fees to join the OLCC market. $2,000 for annual sales incomes between $100,000 and $200,000. $3,000 for annual sales incomes between $200,000 and $300,000, and $4,000 for annual sales incomes over $300,000. Now, we realize that in the first year, there's not going to be any way to tell how much is going to income is going to be made from each processing designation, okay. Each tier.
So I think I'm hearing you say that you would like to have the registration or licensing fees be tailored to the size or profitability of the firm.
Exactly.
Right,
yes.
You.
Because we are my partner and I are in a small business that probably wouldn't even make $100,000. But you know that's a situation where we wanted to try and cut our costs for
okay.
producing.
All right. Thank you. Does that cover your testimony?
Yes,
okay.
It does.
Thank you so much for being here.
And my partner is here, too, and she's on the list, so we
great.
Didn't get a chance to talk. So.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. McAllister, and then I'm actually going to invite OLCC to, if you'd like to have a representative come forward and share your thoughts on these amendments. And then we're going to go to Mr. Baines and Senator Przanski for some comments. So that's the next three rounds. Thanks.
Madam Chairs, esteemed members of the panel and members of the public. My name is Chris McAllister. I come from Springfield, Oregon, Lane County. I have support for the commission if it's with Dash 14, if there are patient reforms. I, for the first time in the last 3 years, had hope that the medical program would actually be given its due, that some of the patients would actually be considered in some of this legislation. And when I looked at the Dash 9 through 15s, I saw stuff that helped growers. I saw stuff that helped adjust things for the bureaucratic side of things, but I did not see necessarily patient amendments. And so as such, because I didn't see those, I don't really have much to put in comments because I can't improve something that's not there. So Section 1 of Dash 9, I think that some of the expansions for the committee should be more patient-based, if at least not more patients, then have Section 6 at a subcommittee of patients and producers that are 51% patient or program oriented, so that way that when medical reform is advocated for, it's from people who are actually in the services, not receiving or paying for services. As in regards to Dash 11 and school limits, the people seem very interested at trying to regulate regarding the schools, but they weren't caring about the children that were left in cars, as mentioned last testimony. And our HIPAA we had protection when the dispensaries came into effect. You couldn't get back into that back door without a card. So kids couldn't get back there without a card.
I'm going to jump in, please. I really appreciate your offering this testimony. I'm realizing that we're facing a time crunch. So if you could, we're going to ask future speakers to limit their testimony to 3 minutes each. And if you could wrap up in the next minute, that would be excellent. And hopefully anything you haven't had a chance to articulate, you could submit for the written record on OLIS. Thank you.
For the record, this is an example of how patients haven't really gotten to have as much voice. They're always at the end and they get a muted topic. So with that being said, I do not support any emergency clauses for peace, public health, health and safety until patient reforms happen. I've lost 7 patients waiting for non-affecting of the medical program to go into effect. Comments saying a few minutes ago saying that we needed to make sure that those good faith actors are considered and not left out in the lurch. I used to pay $500 to take care of 16 people. Now those same people would cost me $12,000 under the current scheme set up by OHA. I'd like to point out that we should bring back, in regards to the state agencies, choice of action. So if OHA, OLCC, and other elements of the government do not protect us as we are in their care or oversight, then we deserve the right to be able to sue them and get them to actually serve the patients. I will submit this to OLIS. There's about 27 corrections in regards to the Dash 9s through 15s that would actually be able to make this a safer, more controlled environment. As for the most vulnerable persons, I take care of people who have Alzheimer's and are on hospice, and they don't have time to wait till 2018 or 2019 to get help. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Okay, thank you so much. So next up, I'm going to invite forward, would OLCC like to come forward? We really appreciate your being here, again, in the spirit of trying to get to as many people as possible. It would be great if you could describe in a fairly concise way your comments, but as the primary agency charged with administering the adult use program, and please just let me know what you need to say, and thank you for being here.
I'm Chair for the record, Steve Marks, Executive Director of OLCC. Really respect the work that the work group did. I think it makes progress towards your goals here. The composition and the change in the focus around the Cannabis Commission, I think, is very productive in terms of moving forward. We have absolutely, as you know, no objection to moving 20 pounds into the system so long as it's tracked in. The bill provides for that. That's fantastic. The tagging of the plants does mimic OLCC system. It's not precise, and it's a point of demarcation on we have larger batches. Jesse can talk about that in more detail if you need that. We do have concerns about the way the notification works in July. You know, prior ideas had a notification period for us in December 1st. Now you've moved the dates out. It's July, January of 19, I believe, for full implementation. What's a bit unclear is in July there has to be a declaration of those moving out of into the lower system, plant count system, but there's not a declaration of those who would be tracked within. We know everyone needs to be tracked by July 19, but if we're going to do it any earlier, it would be good to have that count or an idea about how many are coming in the system as early as possible so we can have the right amount of inspectors in place to make that inspection occur. And then lastly, we do have concerns about the inspections and using the evidence that is directly the result of the metric system. Need to bring these to your attention. It's obviously a policy choice you will make, but if there are violations on the side of either OMMP requirements or ODA requirements, like illegal pesticides, this didn't even allow us to report it to them, and that could be used by others, maybe not us, as evidence. So, with that, Jesse, you get any particular statement?
Really? You're all set?
Yeah, you
that was only that was well under your 3 minutes per.
For the record, Steve Marks covered all of my points.
All right. Thank you very much. So we'll continue to have conversations about this. Is, you know, our first opportunity to get feedback from you formally on these proposals. So appreciate the input. Okay. Now I'm going to invite forward John Baines and Senator Przanski. You can come to the front if you'd like. And then after that, let's have, please, Phyllis Copeland, Don Morse, and Christine Everts as the next three to come up. And then we'll have two more people, and then we'll move to Senate Bill 1015.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. For the record, Floyd Przanski, State Senator, District 4, parts of Elaine and Douglas Counties. Thank you very much for allowing for 2198 to be part of our discussions for tonight. I do want to put on the record, I think it's important, based on how this the Dash 9s came about. As it was stated from previous speakers, there were two meetings. The first meeting had about 12 to 15 people that were there. The second meeting had only four. That was what I would consider a subcommittee of the four individuals who came up with what became the Dash 9s. There was no sharing or getting the Dash 9s back to the larger committee for any input before it came out. And I know it's been kind of described as the committee amendment, but I would submit, based on some of the stuff that was in there versus some of the stuff that was talked at the larger meeting, that there wasn't a full consensus. There may have been with the four individuals that were part of the subgroup. And that is why I went ahead and took the opportunity to get some additional amendments drafted to call out some of the distinctions that are here. And specifically, as we've talked about on the record, the differences between the Dash 9s and the Dash 14s, everything is verbatim with the exception of what I call, again, the marriage penalty, ensuring that those individuals that are in the same household that each have a card would have been be entitled to have what they could do if they were on their own. That would be 6 plants each. That would be a total of 12, and under 91, having the 4 plants that is allowed under the interpretation from the Attorney General's opinion, as compared to the Dash 9s, limiting 2 cardholders living at the same residence only having 6 plants instead of the 12. Regarding the Dash 13s, that is the one dealing with the 20-pound excess into the market. This is an area of the concern with what is in the Dash 9s is it does, in fact, have a cutoff date. Either you're in the program now or you become part of the program at or before the time of the signing of the 2198 into law. What that will create is a situation that it will basically discourage anyone who wants to go into the medical grow on a smaller operation to provide for patients because they will not have the same benefit of anyone that is in the program already to be able to move up to 20 pounds of product into the OLCC side. I personally find that to be a situation that will discourage instead of encourage and maintain the medical marijuana program that was passed by the voters in 1998 and has been part of our system since 1999. And understanding what Measure 91 stated, that we would not, through that measure being passed, decimate the medical program. And it seems to me that we continue to see more forced decisions to, I should say, decisions that are being forced on individuals on economics and not allowing them to do what, as Mr. Taylor said, provide patient with access to medical marijuana, in many cases at no cost to them because they just can't afford it. John Bays, who is with me, is an individual I've known for many years. He is very renowned in the industry, and I've asked John to come forward to give his perspective. I will tell you that at my request, he did serve on at least one of the RACs during the implementation on 91, and I've asked him to come tonight because of his belief and his model that he uses for medical grow and for ensuring that patients, in fact, have access to medicine.
Thank you. Welcome.
Welcome, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you for listening. And it's my pleasure to be here before you all. My name is John Bays. I'm the owner of Green Beauty. I'm a national and international consultant in the cannabis industry, also served in Iraq and other consulting and legislation, things like that, and a grower and been working in the medical system for, you know, since it began and consulting on all levels, you know, horticulture to how to make medicines, these different things, how to provide, how to breed, how to hold genetics, how to do these certain things that have been a core facet to really the cannabis industry in Oregon and why we're renowned as one of the world's best brands for cannabis is our state. And it wasn't really because of these new rec brands coming in right now. It's because of what was founded in a home brew style, artisan style, by families that cared about other families, that people that cared about other people. And so what I'm noticing is that's being eliminated quite rapidly by a lot of the rules, a lot of the things that was advised or submitted through RAC being disregarded and things like that, and just how it works. But I think really the 20-pound input into the OLCC market would really help the industry, really help the diversity for medical patients. For all people in the industry, what I've noticed is all dispensaries, I've consulted one dispensary, opened it, designed it, the whole thing. We stayed medical for certain branding reasons because we want to provide to the patients because a lot of them were not being able to get the diversity of medicine that they could. Most of my friends that own dispensaries, they can only select from a certain few brands. There are now their diversity of strains, the diversity of styles of medicine they can offer has been extremely limited. I mean, you know, Farm is one of the best dispensaries in the state, they say, and you go in there, you can get 3 chemically grown cannabis strains and maybe 15 other ones that are, you know, variation of quality, but not like it used to be. So it's really limited a lot of the quality and a lot of the good medicine that's able to be provided to the people, and I think that's what the main focus of this plant actually was for the whole system. It's not necessarily about getting high. It was about how to help people, and I feel that we can really focus on that, it'll help with all these processes as we work forward, you know?
Thank you. I appreciate you being here. That's about 3 minutes. I think Senator Przanski wants to ask you some questions about plant counts and his position on the number of seeds and starts and immatures and above 24 inches and below. So please go ahead and do that. And again, we have about 10 people signed up on the 10:15, and we have about 4 people left on 2198. But I want to honor
very quick.
John,
could you just go over, I think there's a couple of things, the genetics that you do, the nursery style of how you get to the point of where you have the mother plant and how you need to protect it for the different strains that you're then able to give or sell to people throughout the state.
So right now with the current law, I'm able to provide multiple styles of genetics to a diverse amount of people. If we cap that limit, I'll not be able to hold certain mothers, certain genetic diversity that have been bred, created for patients for a multitude of different ailments. So really offering a higher count to where we can, or a nursery amendment or something into the medical market to where we can have an unlimited amount of veg in that location to where we can distribute to the entire medical market, so the onus is on us and not on everyone else, so we can hold a genetic stock, so we can hold the nursery stock, so we can supply. I think it's really really limiting to people's health and people's access if we start to cap these things and start to expunge the genetic diversity that the last 40 years of breeding has created in Oregon on its own.
The only other question I would ask at this time is the 24-inch plant size for being a viable plant. I saw a number of people, and I saw you kind of twitched.
Yeah, that's really confusing because you have to put a plant into flower, which changing the light cycle for 12-12, light on, light off, and you have to induce the flowering, and it takes 2 weeks for the plant to even become somewhat starting to show signs of flowering, 1 to 2 weeks. It's not even viable for 6 weeks into flowering, viable as a product to get high or medicinally. So as a vegetative plant, it's never viable, actually, as a medicinally psycho, altering plant. It's just benign. So I think that should really be thought about when we're talking about what viable is.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate
Thank
that.
You.
Thank you both for your comments on that. I'm going to invite Phyllis. I'm sorry.
If I could.
Please, absolutely.
You're fine. There is something rational. In most plants, they do a whole lot of stuff, and everything comes together at the last minute. I mean, that's the way it is. I know a little bit about that stuff. But what I wanted to say, Madam Chair, for the record, is Senator Przanski hasn't been doing this all on his own. I was part of the group, and we have been consulting on the amendments. We do have some way to go, but I would suggest the additional amendments are going to be relevant to this bill.
Thank you. Thank you both for weighing in on that, and thank you, Mr. Baines. All right. Now, if we could please have Phyllis Copeland, Don Morse, and Christine Everts come forward, that'd be great. And then we also have Mike Rockland signed up. Mr. Kramer, you are signed up as the last speaker for both of the bills. I know it is your practice to speak as the last speaker in the hearing. Would you like to just be called at the very end of the hearing?
That would be fine.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. So then we have Mr. Rockland after this, and then we're going to move to Senate Bill 1015, and we have really 11 people signed up, so as some of whom I think have traveled a fair distance. Welcome.
Representative Leininger, Senator Burdick, and the rest of the members, thanks for allowing me to speak. First, I'd like to commend all of you for being able to keep track of what amendment does what to what bill. It's quite confusing. I have a problem without a scorecard. So I'm just going to go through some things that we've heard tonight and give the opinion of the Oregon Cannabis Business Council. First off, we'd like you to not limit what can come into rec side sales. We believe that competition is fine, that the marketplace will work its way out. We believe that one way or another, The recreational side is going to compete with the black market. And the more cannabis we can bring in from the medical side into the rec and make it available for sale there, we feel we're decreasing the amount that will eventually find its way to the black market. So we think that that is very important. Next, we would ask that you limit it to 24 plants, as was discussed previously, and not increase that amount. Those growing more than 24 plants and wanting to sell should be required to be a micro canopy under the OLCC. We take the position that the black market competes with legitimate business. We ask that you consider requiring the OLCC to maintain a list of micro and bump-up growers with a contact email address for each, so that patients can contact them to inquire about the availability of the medicine that they are growing. You know, someone doing the bump-up canopy may not have a home for all of the weight that they're going to have available. And if we're really concerned about getting this to patients, then I think this is something we should do. Furthermore, I think that at least in the beginning, until we know how much medicine is moved to patients, that we should use the means testing. And by that, I mean anyone with a discounted card, because they have been means tested or meet certain eligibility requirements, should be moved to the head of the list. Regarding the commission, as long as the commission has no influence whatsoever over REC in any way, we have no problem with the commission. I believe that, or we believe that waiting until 2019 for tracking is risking federal meddling. I think it's there's no good reason to wait till that day, and I think we need to move that along sooner than later. And last, I would say that setting a limit on the size of clones is a move in the backwards. We went to flowering and non-flowering plants as a means of avoiding people getting into trouble with plants that had grown overnight, were too big, et cetera. And I think that that aspect should be revisited for those reasons. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hi, welcome.
Hi. I'm Phyllis Copeland, and I'm going to withdraw my testimony for testifying. My issues have already been addressed.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
3 minutes magically restored. We really appreciate you being here, though, and would love to hear from you if you want to say something.
Co-chairs Burdick Leininger and members of the committee, my name is Christine Everts, testifying on behalf of the Oregon Sun Growers Guild in support of House Bill 2198 and the Dash 9 amendments. The Oregon Sun Growers Guild represents outdoor cannabis producers in Oregon who serve patients both in the OMMP as well as OLCC licensed producers who provide clean, safe cannabis to adult use consumers. We appreciate the important work this committee is doing to restructure and modernize the medical system, recognizing that the vitality of the medical system depends upon accessibility to the adult use market, and likewise, the adult use market depends on the existence of the medical system. The Guild was supportive of House Bill 2198 as introduced, as well as with the Dash 7 amendments, and we're here today in support of the Dash 9s. These amendments are the product of a collaborative process to bring together the various parties affected by this legislation to find some path forward that addresses the dual goals of protecting the grower-patient relationship and preventing diversion. We're very supportive of the creation of the Cannabis Commission, especially its focus on research and influence over the rulemaking process through regular reports and recommendations to the legislature. With regard to tracking, the Dash 9s adjust the dates for a more realistic timeline, and it spells out more clearly what the mandate does and does not require. We appreciate the bright line of only requiring those growing more than 12 plants to report into Metric. However, we would ask the committee to clarify that households with two patients can continue to grow their 12 plants so these folks don't fall into a donut hole of having to register as a grow site to continue growing their own medicine, which is an additional cost burden worth consideration. Again, we strongly support the provision that allows modest but critical access for medical growers to the recreational market through limited transfers to OLCC wholesalers and processors. This helps provide a place for excess medical product to go and offsets the loss of medical dispensaries after the mass migration over to recreational licensure. In conclusion, we appreciate the co-chair's commitment to reconciling House Bill 2198 and Senate Bill 1057. And we would urge the committee to pass 2198 with the -9 amendments, which secures a stronger future for Oregon's OMMP and fixes key components of Senate Bill 1057. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Senator Przanski.
Yeah, thank you. Christine, we've met on this. I guess I'm kind of confused because the difference between the -9s and the -14s is the whether a husband and wife can have 12 plants versus 6 plants. And I thought one of the things that you were telling me is that you thought that the 14s were preferred, even though they may have just come out. They're exactly the same as the 9. So I'm getting confused as to your testimony now. Are you for having only two growers who are at the same residence only having 6 plants, or are you supporting each of them having their 6 plants plus the 4?
Co-Chair Leininger, Senator Przanski, yes, I came prepared to testify in support of the -9 amendments. It's come to my attention that the -14 amendments would address everything in the -9s in addition to the concern that the Guild has regarding those 12-plant households being able to continue. So, you know, I would want to clarify that we are in support of the -14 amendments. There has been consensus coming out of the group last week for the -9s, and I will say that it was made clear that that is a policy decision that the legislature and this committee would need to consider, and so we would ask the committee to consider that decision.
So it sounds like you'd prefer the -14, but you're here also saying that you would prefer the -9 to not having a version of 2198 if for some reason
That's
those
correct.
Were the oppositional choices.
Chair Leininger, well said. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, panel. And Mr. Rockland, please come forward. And then, Mr. Mayor, we'd love to have you come forward and give us a pretty brief overview of Senate Bill 1015. And then we'll ask Representative Wilson and Ms. Courtney Moran to come forward and describe some of the thinking and needs that motivated the creation of the bill. And then we're going to work through about 10 people signed up for that, so we're going to try to move quickly. Welcome, Mr. Rockland.
Thank you. Honorable Co-Chairs Burdick, Leininger, and Joint Committee members. For the record, my name is Michael David Rockland. I own a cannabis business consulting firm. This is the third year now, and it's called MJ Enterprises, and I do business consulting as well as medical. I'm also an independent voice as a licensed health professional nurse with cannabinoid therapeutic expertise. My clinical expertise is in pain management, which is very relevant to the discussion we're having today. And, you know, I've appeared before the committee many times since Measure 91, but I want to say that the committee has served Oregon really well, this joint committee. And you've been a deliberative body that has helped Oregon create a safe and meaningful path for the legalization of cannabis, keeping within the intent of the voters, including a large population of disabled and highly medical needed Oregonian patients. I offer the following comments for consideration on House Bill 2198. First of all, this bill is a necessary companion bill to Senate Bill 1057, as we heard Mark Mayer suggest, for reconciliation. And it's critical to ensure a meaningful future for OMMP program for those who have established a medical need. If it's passed, it will send a strong signal to Oregon citizens that Oregon will not abandon patients at this critical juncture in time. A medical use of cannabis board can be an important resource to facilitate needed interagency agreements that have been promised and I haven't seen yet, thereby transitioning into a unified system. Without a formal independent medical use body, the fate of the OMMP and possibly the entire regulated industry might not retain our outstanding reputation, as you heard before, in the cannabis sector as a true craft and made in Oregon brand. That's significant. We do have a lot of really artisan growers that have learned and grown for medical patients. Medical use will not go away. Even with almost a century of oppressive resistance, I'm hearing lately from interested scientists and clinicians that are interested in learning about this ancient healing and wellness herb. However, there's still significant institutional resistance, like academic and government, to move forward with a meaningful research and education that's needed now. Okay, so I'll speed it up. The health outcomes of pain patients can be significantly influenced. That's my message. Approximately 70% of the U.S. has pain. And this is a valid, less toxic, safer product than opioids. We need the research. We need this bill. I really appreciate the work that's gone into this. Lots of research is needed on cannabinoids, so the time is here, and appreciate your help to move forward on this important bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. All right, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2198. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1015 and invite forward Mark Mayer to give us this time. We'll ask for quite a brief overview of the bill, and then I'll invite forward Courtney Moran and Representative Wilson to help put this into context. Thank you.
Chairs Leininger, Burdick, members of the committee. It's a little better now. My name is Mark Mayer, Deputy Legislative Counsel, here to briefly explain this particular amendment to Senate Bill 1015, the Dash 3 amendments. Representative Wilson is going to be able to speak better to the purpose of it, and I believe if Jesse Sweet's invited up, he'll be able to speak better to the actual way it's going to work technically, since he was the primary contact from OLCC for how it's going to work. Basically, what this amendment does is, right now we have, as with medical and Oregon Liquor Control Commission regulated marijuana, we have two systems with OLCC and State Department of Agriculture with regard to industrial hemp, and there is no cross transference of product allowed under law. It's prohibited. And so what this particular amendment would do is it would allow industrial hemp growers under certain conditions to transfer industrial hemp to a Oregon Liquor Control Commission licensed processor, only a processor. And that processor will be able to turn that industrial hemp into a variety of products. They'll be able to turn it into industrial hemp concentrates, industrial hemp extracts. They'll be able to turn it into other industrial hemp commodities and products. Important thing to remember here is all of these things are comprised completely of industrial hemp. They can also use it to supplement the making of marijuana items, along with marijuana itself. At that point, the bill allows it to go two different paths. The products, if they're completely made from, if they're industrial hemp products and only industrial hemp derived, those products can be sold back to an industrial hemp handler under certain conditions, including the fact that there may have been no marijuana may have been allowed in the making of the product, or it can go through the OLCC system and sold at an OLCC retail store. There was a Dash 2 amendment. I want to speak very quickly about the fact as to why we needed a Dash 3. It's important about how we call these, what we call these products and how we classify them for taxation purposes. In order to avoid this becoming a bill for raising revenue, we need to make sure that these products are differentiated in the law from marijuana items, which are taxed. And so as you're considering potential amendments or how to further change the bill, that is an important thing to consider. That's it.
Thank you. Great. All right. Thanks so much. I don't see any hands up for questions to you. I'd like to invite Rep. Wilson and Courtney Moran to come forward. Mr. Sweet, why don't you join them at the table? And then actually, I'd like to combine this with the agency opportunity to speak to the bill as well, unless I get any signals from the agency that you have that you need to provide additional separate comment on the bill from others. And then after that, let's plan to invite forward Sean Stockmeyer, Adam Kurtz, and William Sear. And we're going to move to 2 minutes each once this group of initial presenters on the bill finishes, with the hope of giving everyone a chance to speak. And I'm happy to stay after the regular end of the meeting, but we're getting close to that ceiling. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee. For the record, Carl Wilson, House District 3, Grants Pass. A couple of thanks first to Senator Ferrioli for the bill. We appreciate the opportunity to have that. And co-chairs, thank you for the opportunity to schedule this. 2 years ago, I didn't even know what industrial hemp was. I'm learning, and I'm a little dangerous here. Have a position on the committee, don't know much about the product, but I'm learning. But this immediately attracted my attention a couple of years ago. When given the opportunity to work on 4060 to make this happen, it was exciting. It was a great opportunity not only for my county, but all of Oregon, and especially rural Oregon. I'm not so concerned how we get there. I just want to get there. I've got a companion bill in Ways and Means right now, House Bill 2371, which is essentially the new remodeled industrial hemp program that will get it past DEA, federal government. It's compliant with the Farm Bill, and I think it's a great piece of legislation. I only hope and pray that it passes out of that process. Senate Bill 1015-3, that's what I'm talking about today. This bill closes the loop. And I think it's what we need to allow for processing and expedited processing. I think it's important when we look at industrial hemp being turned into concentrates and extracts, other cannabinoid products, all while being verified 0.3% THC or less. I think that's just an outstanding combination of things that this bill can do. By utilizing OLCC-licensed processors. And that, of course, allows us to move ahead, keep this whole process going. This bill, of course, the Dash 3s, describes a pathway to attract clean CBD product. We know that some people are growing for seed and fiber, indeed, but many people, in fact, most people, interested in CBDs. And that's why I think that this will close the loop and allow all of these products to be produced carefully and in the right way. The bill also goes to describe the extraction and concentration methods as well. So with the passage of the Dash 3s in conjunction with the previously mentioned bill, I think it gets us where we need to go as an industry: seed, fiber, and CBD production. Can't wait to see this happen. So once again, I don't necessarily care about every nuance and how we get there, but I just think it's imperative that we close ranks as hempers and get there. So looking forward to it.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee. I'm Courtney Moran. I'm a cannabis attorney. I'm also an industrial hemp lobbyist, but I'm here just today as a citizen and explaining this bill. So not to repeat what Mark said, just to further explain, as we stand today, industrial hemp or products derived from industrial hemp that contain cannabinoids are prohibited from being present on an OLCC licensed premise, with the exception for retail sales. Now, Senate Bill 1015 will provide the authority for OLCC to allow industrial hemp registered growers that are registered with the Department of Agriculture to transfer industrial hemp, meaning the plant material, to an OLCC licensed processor to process that industrial hemp plant material into either an industrial hemp concentrate, an industrial hemp extract, an industrial hemp commodity or product, or into a marijuana item. And the Dash 3 bill does define industrial hemp concentrates and industrial hemp extracts. The bill further provides that once the industrial hemp is delivered to that OLCC licensed processor, that the industrial hemp will be tracked into metric and maintained tracked throughout the system. All transfers would be accompanied by test results, which would then be retained by that OLCC processor. The Dash 3 also provides that the OLCC processor may transfer processed product to other OLCC licensees, which currently is not allowed right now, or if that hemp was processed completely independently of any marijuana, that those hemp products could be transferred back to an industrial hemp registered handler. Senate Bill 1015 also creates rulemaking authority for OLCC over processing and transfers, including establishing limits on THC concentration in any products that would be returned to an ODA registered handler. And it also creates a fee structure and fee authority for OLCC in implementation of this legislation. So I look forward today to the testimony by OLCC, by the Department of Justice, by AOC, and members of the Oregon Industrial Hemp Farmers Association, after which we can navigate together how best to move these two industries forward. And again, Senator Ferrielli, thank you for providing the opportunity for this mechanism to combine these two industries. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Mr. Sweet, and please feel free to add information about the mechanics of the bill, but also if you want to raise concerns or questions that your agency would like to have put forward as we're starting the work on the bill, that would be great.
Thank you. For the record, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Jesse Sweet with the OLCC. I'd like to take some opportunity to provide some context on the federal requirements for hemp and recent Oregon DOJ guidance to the agencies. As you might recall, we had representatives from Oregon DOJ testifying before this committee in February, and we shared some written advice with the committee as it relates to hemp and the statement of principles issued in August 2016 by the DEA, FDA, and U.S. Department of Agriculture. So the key point in that's contained in that statement of principles is that the federal government considers hemp, which is grown for human consumption rather than seed and fiber, to be a Schedule I controlled substance. So in interpreting that statement of principles, Oregon's DOJ recommended that hemp be regulated in the same way as marijuana, meaning that it be subject to the same regulations, the same seed-to-sale tracking system. This is obviously not what we have here. So in that way, I think there are still some global policy issues lingering. As it relates to the more specific agency concerns with hemp, our primary concern was inversion. And to that end, I think that this bill does a very good job of putting proper safeguards in place to mitigate the opportunities for diversion, meaning when the hemp comes into the OLCC processor, we have sufficient regulations to ensure that it is truly hemp and not marijuana that has been grown illegally. So in that sense, this bill puts us in a better position than where we are currently. However, I think there are still some unanswered questions as to the federal status of hemp globally. There's also some specific technical issues that I think we can work through on clarifying the combination of products on and on our fee authority. Another global policy issue that I think the legislature may want to consider is what happens to these hemp extracts when the hemp reaches a THC level above 0.3%. So if you start with a flower that is at 0.3% THC, you extract that, it may become somewhere between 3 to 5% THC when the extraction is completed. This particular bill gives OLCC rule authority to limit that as it relates to the hemp that is processed in our licensed processors, but it does not address any hemp that is processed outside of our licensed processors. And there may be other people who testify to that effect today. So that is there's a brief summary of the bill of how I think it could work and what it does and doesn't do, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Excellent. I'm going to I'm not seeing anyone raise a hand with a question now. I appreciate what I think I heard all three of you say, which is that you're open to working together to find a path forwards to get as much done this session to support the legal hemp sector as we can. And I think everyone sort of uniformly agrees that we're ready and willing and have some work to do to move forward. And that's a great starting place at this point in the public hearing. So thank you. And I'm going to, in the spirit of trying to bring up more people, invite you to go back to your seats. And then let's have, please, Sean Stockmeyer, Adam Kurtz, and William Sear come forward. And then after that, I'm going to ask Rob Bovet, Cliff Thompson, and Tom Burns. Pardon me, not Tom Burns, Matt Cyrus, come forward. And then we're going to ask you to go to 2 minutes per in the hope of getting as many people through as we possibly can. And you can submit testimony for the record if we haven't enabled you to say your whole piece. Welcome. Unfortunately, a couple of people are walking in and out, but we are excited to hear what you have to say.
Greetings, members of the committee. It's my pleasure to be able to speak with you today. My name is Sean Stockmeyer. I'm the acting CEO. And representing New Earth Biosciences, a $4 million industrial hemp processing facility located here in Salem. Additionally, I'm on the board of the directors of Standard Hemp out of Denver, Colorado, and a senior engineer for Dunagro, which is the largest hemp company in Holland. I've been in the hemp industry for 6 years. I've processed more than 200,000 pounds of hemp during that time. At this moment, I'm here to testify against the proposed bill in its current form. I'll state that. Long and short, 2 minutes. It's our belief that licensed hemp extractors and processors should be allowed to do exactly what we were created to do in the first place, which is extract hemp. The specialization in extraction and refinement of CBD from industrial hemp, that's what we built our facility to do, to excel in it, to do it as cheap as possible and in the most efficient manner in the industry. In its current form, this bill would primarily benefit marijuana processors and have a massive negative ramifications on both hemp extractors and product manufacturers, and to a lesser extent, hemp farmers themselves. We have made a multi-million dollar investment in Oregon, generated jobs, tax revenue, and created our facility specifically to comply with laws here. We welcome a bill that allows people to get the medicine that they need. We welcome a bill that will allow CBD to go into the marijuana program, but we believe that marijuana, OLCC, marijuana extractors should not be able to extract hemp. That people that were in the hemp industry that are here that created massive facilities to extract hemp should be allowed to sell that oil into the OLCC. It should be tested one way, brought into OLCC, and I probably have another 2 minutes, but I'm off.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your trying to squeeze it into the available time. And if you have not submitted written remarks, please feel free.
I will.
Hi, welcome.
Thank you, co-chairs and committee members. My name is Adam Kurtz, Oregon Fusion. We are a CBD hemp farm. And I would like to see an adjustment to Senate Bill 1015-3 that would include industrial hemp and hemp extract to be pushed through an OLCC processor. This is due to the fact that some hemp farms are vertically integrated, are doing their own extracts, and we need a place to be able to push that. The other reason is current OLCC processors will charge upwards of $300 a pound to extract THC marijuana. Our material is worth anywhere from 25 to 200 a pound on a really good day, so it will be cost prohibitive. The THC guys can absorb this because they have $1 million machines and a higher price point. Our goal is to be able to allow us farmers to extract and include this extract and transfer it into the regulated system.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, co-chairs, committee members. My name is William Sear. I'm founding member and managing partner of Gaia Bounty, Inc. We are an OLCC licensed facility located here in Salem. I'm also owner of a newly formed company, United Foodwork, Unique Foodworks, also located here in Salem, specifically for the processing of hemp CBD into consumable products. So as with Sean, we've made the investment for the infrastructure as a starting point to help serve the industry with CBD products. I'm certainly in full support of CBD products through the OLCC system. We're part of that system. I understand how the system works, and I recommend a couple changes. Having been part of this, OHA since 2014 transitioned to OLCC this year. And always been very compliant and a member of the community with no infractions, no problems. So as I see it, I think it's best to not allow flower to enter into the OLCC extraction supply chain. The reason is there's variability in extraction and percentage of extraction, and then to allow the extraction oil or other products to get outside of metrics, come back into the hemp industry, is, to me, just, I see it as a problem waiting to happen. So we know about diversion and what causes it, and not to set it up. Give you a little background on myself. As a founding member of OCBC, board member, OCBC, an active member, Oregon Processors Association, I'm a board member, Oregon Responsible Edible Council, I'm a board member.
I'm afraid I'm going to need to cut you off. Sounds like you bring
on.
Tremendous, sounds like you've got a lot of background. Thank you so much. We really appreciate your coming in. It helps a lot when people who are from the sector or, you know, people who have regular jobs outside of being in the legislature come talk to us, so I appreciate it. Thank you. All right, in the spirit of trying to move as many people through as we possibly can, and I think we can get to everyone. I'm willing to stay a couple minutes late. Hopefully some of my colleagues will be able to join me in that. Let's have Rob Bovet, Cliff Thomason, and Matt Cyrus come forward, and then we're going to have Lauren Young, Andrew Anderson, and Tom Burns, please.
Co-Chair Leininger, Co-Chair Burdick, member of the committee for the record, Rob Bovet, Legal Counsel, Association of Oregon Counties. I'm going to be really brief. I'm just going to adopt everything Jesse says. So I have the same concerns that Jesse expressed, basically verbatim, and I'm happy to work on any work group or stakeholder group to work out those concerns.
I think that's a great point. It would be nice to have us talk about next steps after this meeting for a work group that could include Representative Wilson and probably OLCC and you, and we'll probably identify Ms. Moran, I imagine. Let's talk about that after this meeting. Thank you. Welcome.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, my name is Matt Cyrus. I represent Deschutes County Farm Bureau and the Oregon Family Farm Association. I'm also a farmer, raised 30 acres of CBD hemp this past year. I also have a background in economics. It's interesting to listen to everybody worrying about their turf up here and previous speakers. I'm a firm believer in the market system. What we found this year is a lack of processing facilities. There's a lot of hemp right now in Oregon that hasn't been processed yet because there wasn't sufficient processing available at a cost-effective number that made sense. Hemp has become globally competitive in the last few years. More and more states are adopting it. Technology is changing on a daily basis. Hemp processing that maybe made sense a year ago can be done for a fraction of the cost this year. There's no reason why, with everything, the things that are in place, why we can't allow the farmers to choose a processor to get it done in a cost-effective manner. The metrics are there. We can track it in. We can track it out. There's no reason why an OLCC processor can't provide the processing that we need. On the other hand, when we go to sell the oil, right now we've got Colorado dumping cheap oil into the Oregon market. We've got buyers on the recreational side are chomping at the bit to try to add hemp CBD into their THC lines in order to dilute them and lower the THC percentages, but they can't use our product because of the current rules. So I would certainly encourage you to adopt the Dash 3s and let the markets dictate where we go and what we do.
Thank you so much. Welcome.
Co-chairs, committee, my name is Cliff Thomason. I'm the original hemp farmer in Oregon from 2 years ago. So we grow both a seed and fiber crop as well as CBD crop in three southern Oregon counties. And one of the bottlenecks in growing it is getting it into the marketplace. Tens of thousands of pounds of hemp left the state last year, and hundreds of thousands of pounds, if not millions of pounds, will leave the state this year. Without having, you know, a marketplace to put it into, it really makes it difficult as a farmer to grow. I've worked diligently behind the scenes trying to get to this point where OLCC processors can take it in. Worked hard to get dispensaries to get it in, but now the next one is those. A lot of the dispensaries are willing to set up farm contracts, or excuse me, processors are willing to set up farm contracts if we can just get this bill passed. I think that it's important to note that CBD versus THC in the marketplace, there's such a low percentage of CBD grown in through the metric system, and so the cost of CBD oil in a dispensary is twice as much as THC. Many people, you know, appreciate the therapeutic value of CBD oils and consider it medicine, and this is something that, you know, will allow affordable access, you know, to therapeutic oils and tinctures and what have you. Also, bear in mind, I know it was mentioned earlier, this isn't about generating revenue, but once it's into the metric system and combined or compounded with THC, would then fall into the taxing system, and so the state would receive revenue once it's blended with THC. So the fiscal impact on it, I think, is going to be a positive thing for the farmers, for the dispensaries, for the processors, and for the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Gentlemen, I'm going to thank you for being here and invite forward our last three panelists. We have three additional speakers and then our closing speaker, Mr. Kramer. So we're close to being able to fit it all within our assigned time. I'd like to invite forward Tom Burns, Andrew Anderson, and Lauren Young, please. You may go ahead and start, please.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, thank you for listening. My name is Andrew Anderson. I'm a Tier 1 grower with a Tier 2 facility in Deschutes County, processor and three retail stores. There's definitely a shortage of CBD in our market, so I would firmly back the ability to process the hemp CBD products. We have an enormous amount of people that come into our stores every day wanting CBD products, and we turn them away all day. And, you know, they're getting them elsewhere, you know, but if we can get more processors online and have the ability to bring the products in, I had the opportunity to have one of the first 15 hemp licenses in 2015. That was one of the three-year licenses that we still hold on our farm. We haven't really done anything with any of the hemp that we've grown yet because there isn't really that legal of a way to get rid of it. So this would give that ability and bridge the gap. So this is my support for the Dash-Through Amendment.
Thank you. Really appreciate that. Thanks for coming over.
Hi. Good evening. I'll make this brief. My name is Lauren Yang. Good evening, honorable co-chairs and committee members. My name is Lauren Yang with Meek Botanicals, a hemp producer in Eugene, Coos Bay, and Coburg. I also represent Eugenius LLC, a Tier 2 OLC recreational cannabis facility producer. Unique Botanicals is also partnered with an OLCC licensed extraction facility and ex-Senator Bill Dwyer, and represent their interests here today as well. We find that this bill would actually be advantageous to our interests in so much as we could process our own CBD on site without opening up another facility. It would save us tens of thousands of dollars and give us an edge over the people who have already geared their businesses towards compliance with the current legislation. With that said, we are against this bill as it hurts many businesses, such as those who have testified against it already. These companies who have invested countless hours and millions of dollars to comply with these ever-changing laws that are being put forth. We would respectfully request that this marijuana and hemp legislation cease unless it's found to be absolutely necessary to the public good and to really consider the regulatory burden on all parties. Again, despite personal financial gain afforded by this proposed bill, we are in opposition to the laws that's currently written. Thank you for your consideration and all your efforts to create fair and equitable policies.
Thank you, Ms. Yang, and I misread your last name, so I apologize for that. Hi, Mr. Burns.
Hi, co-chairs and members. I'm Tom Burns with Chalice Farms. We're here to support the Dash-3 amendments. I was fascinated to hear the concerns expressed by the hemp growers who say we don't want to compete in the recreational market because we think that the processors will charge too much to process our hemp. I don't know whether that's a true statement or not. What I know is today we, as an OLCC licensed processor who has excess capacity, cannot accept hemp. We want to. We would like to. We have an opportunity to grow hemp on a farm that we own in Grant County. But until we can accept hemp and process it into an OLCC usable product, we're hamstrung. And we think this bill would go a long ways towards addressing that. We support it. However, I did hear very carefully what both Rob Levitt and Jesse Sweet said. We may have a legal problem. And so we would look forward to working with work group, if that's where it heads, to try and address how to make this bill work for all parties without making any putting anybody at a competitive disadvantage, and address the potential legal problem that Jesse and Rob Levette have identified. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much. All right. I'm going to thank you for being here, and we will invite forward Mr. Kramer. I don't see any questions from the panel, but it's really helpful to hear your testimony. Folks in the audience, we are, as we sit up here, trying to think through what the composition of a work group might look like that would reflect a wide range of perspectives on this. So after the meeting, we're going to reach out to a few people to see if you'd be interested in thinking through next steps with some counterparts. Welcome, Mr. Kramer.
Thank you. My name is Pete Kramer. I'm from Marion County. I've been a patient. I'm a grower. I'm a concerned citizen. With the regulations that have been passed after 91, when 91 was made up, we weren't going to touch the medical program. Now a grower has to come up with $200 for each additional grow site. A lot of the patients are low income. They get their medicine for on the cuff because the grower has consideration and he sees the suffering that they have. And fortunately, they're able to help them out. Have considerations for the patient's rights in getting affordable medicine, like the original plan that we voted back in 98. The OMA should stay the way it was and not jumbled up. And how about the money that you're making off of the recreational taxes? I heard that didn't go to the school thing. You're just collecting the interest on it. If I could be any help, please, I would like to. Thank you, and have fun.
Thank you so much. I think Mr. Kramer made an important point that we are going to speak to in our next hearing, but we didn't have time to provide appropriate public notice to be able to address it in this hearing after the Statesman Journal article came out. There was an article about the fact that as much as $75 million in tax revenue has been collected to date, and the Department of Revenue has that money and is going to be distributing it right now. There is a formula for distribution that's prescribed in statute, and there are some proposals to change that, but none of those proposals have been moved through as legislation yet. But we're going to get an update next week on the status of distribution and plans for next steps so that people have some information to take away on that. In terms of, in terms of next steps with the work group, definitely we'd like to have Jesse Sweet, Rob Bovette, we're going to invite Jeff Rhodes, who is the governor's policy advisor, Representative Wilson, Representative Fahey, we'd like to have you serve on that. Also, Courtney Moran and Lauren Yang, now that I've got your last name correctly, I don't know if you're even still in the room, but we're trying to get a variety of perspectives, and you haven't testified before the committee before, but I appreciated your simultaneous opposition to the bill and recognition that it was actually good for your business interests. That's the kind of willingness to think sort of in a balanced way that we're trying to assemble as we're trying to find a path forward. So I'd like to have you consider serving on a work group for next steps of the bill. I think the message to the work group is we'd like to see something pass. We'd like to develop something that can pass under the leadership of Representative Wilson and his counterpart, Representative Fahey. So we'd like to have people be willing to come to the table to try to find something that we can develop and pass. And Ms. Yang, since we don't even really know each other, if you can't do this, please feel free to tell us, but it would be nice to have you consider it. Everyone else, hopefully you can join. And with that, we're going to Senator Poznanski.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. If you want some type of Senate representation.
Well, yes. Would you like to serve as our Senate representation? Well, we tried to get a Republican and a Democrat, but I wasn't sitting close to the senators. So.
No, that's fine. Since
Would you like to
participated in getting the hemp bill passed in 2009, I'd be glad to help out
Senator,
our colleagues on the House side.
Madam Chair, at your pleasure, I would be happy to participate. I do want to say one thing about the revenue. There is a bill in Senate Revenue Committee that I think is trying to be in line with the ballot measure, but I'd also point out that I believe the co-chairs have already spent all that money.
Co-chairs, not the Marijuana Committee co-chairs, the Ways and Means co-chairs. And he's speaking figuratively, actually, not literally.
No, it's so, in their budget.
Yeah, so. Well, in their budget, which hasn't passed yet.
Yes.
And so the money is still at DOR. Okay, great point, though, and it'll be important to have that update. So we're going to invite Senators Poznanski and Cruz to join that work group. With that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1015 and adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
1015.